to Useful Idiots. I'm Katie Halper.
And I'm Aaron Mattick.
How's it going, Aaron?
It's going. It's going. How are you?
It's good. I've been knitting lately.
Okay. What are you knitting?
I knit two scarves. One for a friend, and this one also for a friend, but she's four.
Are you starting a collection, or is this just exclusively for your friends?
I keep it local. So, I mean, I guess I could turn into a business. It's a little time consuming and expensive to make it a business, but I like doing it for the holidays. And I make them, they're very unique because I basically know two scarves will look alike because I just kind of pick a pattern as I go. So I do a little knit, purl, different kinds of stitches. Yeah. You can see this one. I don't know if you can see, but it's ribbed. You can see the pattern, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's ribbed. Yes. That's a cool, it's a new thing that I, but then it goes, look, it's ribbed. Now look what it is here. It's no longer ribbed. Then it ribs again.
Wow. Very, very complex design. Yeah. Well, I hope one day that hits the streets, mass market.
Maybe you'll be in luck. Maybe you'll turn out lucky, and in March you'll get one. But I don't know if you'd wear a homemade scarf, would you?
Probably not. No.
All right. No, I won't waste it on you then.
Yeah. Okay. Well, as always, if you go to usefulidiots.substack.com, you can sign up for bonus content, including taking part in the Absurd Arena, where you get to interact with other Useful Idiots and ask us questions. So, Wilson, what do we have this week?
This week in the Absurd Arena, we had another great discussion, and it was based on last week's Absurd Arena, which turned into a bit of a venting session. So this week, as we react to that, the question was, how do you react to the ceaseless bludgeoning of news? How, for those of us not on the front lines of activism, can we turn those reactions productive?
Interesting question. Wow. How can we turn it into positive? I mean, I do think that there's a role in providing people with information, right? Providing activists with information. So I think that's a good way to respond positively, that I think we try to do on this show. Also, it gives people a sense, I think, of community or comfort so that they can keep on going. You know, people talk often about like preaching to the choir, but I think the choir needs motivation.
Yeah, look, this is a tough, this is the perennial question. How do you make a change? How do you get involved? And it's difficult. You know, recently, Katie, you and I went to this rally in New York City for Julian Assange, huge issue. This heroic figure, I think, who's exposed more state crimes than pretty much anybody else, is being persecuted and tortured for his journalism. And the crowd in New York City the other day was, it was substantial, but it wasn't massive. I've noticed that there's just not a lot of huge outpouring for Julian Assange, in part, I think, because there's been such a successful propaganda campaign to demonize him. So, how do you get around that? Well, it's just the people who get around that are those who are determined, and they just keep organizing. And there, in the case of Julian Assange, there are people like that who have been, in the face of all the obstacles and all the drawn out drama, just keep doing it. And that's the answer. Like anything, you got to find a concrete way to apply your principles in action, and you find a cause you're into, and you find other people who feel the same way, and you organize, you take part in it. There's really no magic formula.
Yeah. And that's why it's so great when people, Randy Credico has been organizing them, so shout out to him and all the other organizers. And of course, Roger Waters really uses his celebrity to raise awareness about issues ranging from Assange to Palestine.
Yeah, so just go be a celebrity. That's the answer, everybody.
Yeah, so go be a celebrity. Do what Roger Waters did.
Become an international rock star, tour stadiums, and use your celebrity for that. That's really the only way to engage in activism.
Yeah, and of course, you make sure that you join our Substack, usefulidiots.substack.com, because we do this Thursday Throwdown, which is where we do your midweek dose of media madness. We analyze media clips, react to media clips, react to news that doesn't fit our Monday morning show. Of course, Monday morning only focuses on the Sunday morning news shows that we watch, so you don't have to. But there's tons of media, obviously, throughout the week. So we respond to that at the Thursday Throwdown. It's a great new segment that we've started.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
And now, of course, it's time for our four food groups. Democrats suck, Republicans suck. Isn't that weird? Isn't that terrible? So what do we got for Democrats, Aaron?
Well, when we're talking about Democrats sucking, we can always point to their main project right now, which is the proxy war in Ukraine. And there was talk a few weeks ago of diplomacy. General Mark Milley, the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, came out in favor of diplomacy. But that's just not happening. And what's happening instead is just more weapons being sent into Ukraine to keep this war going for as long as possible. So here is the latest one from CNN. The headline reads, exclusive, U.S. finalizing plans to send Patriot missile defense system to Ukraine. And the crazy thing about this is that just a few months ago, the Biden administration was refusing to send Patriot missiles to Ukraine for this reason. This is a headline from Defense One in March of this year. Why the U.S. won't give Patriot interceptors to Ukraine. The article says Pentagon officials will not send the advanced Patriot air defense system to Ukraine, saying Thursday that U.S. forces would need to enter Ukraine to operate it, which is a non-starter for the Biden administration. So back in March, it was a non-starter to send Patriot missiles to Ukraine. Now, December 2022, end of the year, it's a starter. And Patriot missiles are being sent, and no word on who exactly is going to operate them, because it takes months and months, at least 3 months, to train people into operating Patriot missiles. And so does this mean that U.S. troops will be entering Ukraine to operate them? We don't know, but it's another escalation of this proxy war and another sign that this war is not ending anytime soon.
Democrats do certainly suck.
And here is a just to visualize how much weaponry is going into Ukraine. This user on Twitter made a graphic just to visualize the amount of weaponry going into Ukraine right now from the U.S. This is from Will Geary on Twitter. And look at that. So for our podcast audience, we're looking at it just basically like a rainbow spewing into Ukraine from the U.S. And the red symbolizes military assistance. The blue is government assistance. And the yellow is humanitarian. If you look at the military, the red, it's just
bigger,
massive, and it's going up and up and up. It's double at least the next category of government aid. So that's all the weaponry we're sending into Ukraine right now. And you know, this coming just after, of course, Biden refused to give railway workers paid sick leave, and Congress backed him up on that. A fraction of that money being spent on Ukraine could have paid for healthcare for or sick leave for rail workers. And so this outpouring of weaponry is just going up.
Scary three-color rainbow we got there.
All right. What do we have for Republican suck?
For Republican suck, we have a story about the Arizona governor. Luckily, he's an outgoing governor, Doug Ducey. And he is protesting immigration by stacking containers on the border. So his term is ending, but he's trying to do all he can to keep out undocumented people. So I'm just reading at the LA Times. Work crews have steadily erected hundreds of double stacked shipping containers topped by razor wire along Arizona's remote eastern boundary with Mexico as Republican Governor Doug Ducey prepares to leave office. Until protesters slowed and then largely halted the work in recent days, Ducey pressed forward over the objections of the U.S. government, environmentalists, an incoming governor who has called it a poor use of resources. So he's basically wasting all these resources, all this money to put these huge containers on the border, trying to make a barrier. But the irony is that undocumented people haven't been coming through the areas that he's putting these containers. And what's really disturbing is that it's causing a lot of environmental damage. So a lot of different organizations are protesting that. And it looks like they finally did stop it. It's finally come to a halt. He was trying to defend it. Ducey was trying to defend it. He said that Arizona holds sole or shared jurisdiction over the 60-foot strip the containers rest on and has a constitutional right to protect residents from, quote, imminent danger of criminals and humanitarian crises. Arizona is going to do the job that Joe Biden refuses to do, secure the border in any way we can. We're not backing down, but they're actually being forced to back down.
If I were Governor Ducey, I would try to save face at this point and just say, hey, everyone, psych, I was actually just doing a big art project, because this totally could be just an installation.
Yeah, it could be actually. Yeah.
By a major artist. So he could rebrand as an artist and say, I'm an artist and this was my art project and I'm making a statement about immigration. And the absurdity of our immigration
policy
system.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do it, Governor Ducey.
Do it, Ducey. You could paint them red, white, and blue.
Sure. Yeah. Oh my God. You can do so much with that.
Yeah.
Okay. So isn't that weird? Look, the category is weird, and apologies to everyone who will have to watch this now, but I think this is weird. So we're going to watch it. And I apologize to you in advance for subjecting you to it.
Okay, for people who are not watching, I have terrible news for you all, which is that the people in this car karaoke include Hillary Clinton and Chelsea Clinton. Walk out the door, just turn
around now, because you're not welcome anymore. Okay, that's good.
Chelsea's driving, Hillary's in the backseat, and I think we got Vanessa Williams there.
Vanessa Williams and the comedian Amber Ruffin. So yes, that is Hillary Clinton and Chelsea Clinton doing carpool karaoke. Carpool karaoke is back.
Wow.
I guess, you know, it was on hiatus, but it's come back. So yeah, that's my weird. I saw it and I thought, here's the former Secretary of State responsible for the deaths of so many people, now getting to, ride around, sing carpool karaoke. There's just something weird about that.
Well, and it's also perfect because I Will Survive really fits with her self-pitying view of history, you know, where everything revolves around Hillary Clinton and her loss.
That is true.
She did indeed survive. She's still kicking, still doing ridiculous things like carpool karaoke and her book Gutsy Women and masterclasses. So she is surviving.
Yeah. And I wonder if that was a part of her show. So her and Chelsea have a show, right?
Yes.
Where they go around and they interview other gutsy women.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is indeed. I mean, that's one of those borderline cases. It could have been, isn't that weird or isn't that terrible?
Fair enough.
But you did it as a weird, which is good because it leaves me the terrible. And boy, do I have a terrible for you guys today. So this terrible story, I became aware of it thanks to Daily Mail. They have great stories like this. And they had a great headline. What a cock up. Man and his father-in-law are kicked off a Michigan flight for saying penis along with another intoxicated passenger. But let's take a look at a video about the story.
New this morning, a father and son are calling out Allegiant Airlines and the Flint Bishop Airport after they were kicked off of their flight last night. The pair were planning to fly to Detroit to meet up with family, but never made it off the ground. According to Jason Bauer, he and his dad were joking around in their seats when an unrelated group of people were getting rowdy nearby. Jason says as the other group was getting kicked off of the plane, one of the flight's crew members kicked them off, too.
They didn't give us a reason until they brought us off the flight. They set us down. Finally, Flint police, like the airport authority, came over and told us we were removed because I said the word penis on board an airplane. I meant it in no derogatory issue. I mean, it's a part of the male anatomy, and it got out, and we were literally kicked off an airplane in Flint, and we had to drive. My wife had to come and get us.
What the hell, Allegiant Airlines? That is a free speech issue. You should, of course, be allowed to say penis on an airplane. You should be allowed to say penis wherever.
unexplained though is why he said penis. He just said He just said I started saying penis.
He just said penis.
He doesn't explain why he said penis, and I'd love to know why he.
I would like to know also. Penis. Yeah, I mean, what do you think he could have been talking about? Maybe the way someone's pants fit, they grabbed the penis too much or something.
Who knows? But I do think also he is a hero, who we deserve to honor. And I know what I'm doing next time I board a flight. I'll be saying penis,
right away.
To stand up for free speech.
Yeah, stand up erectly.
That's the part that I'll be playing. You know, like. Our question today in the absurd arena was, you know, what can you do to apply your beliefs into action? And so this is what I'm doing. This is how I'm taking a stand. I'm saying penis next time I take a flight. And I encourage everyone watching to do the same.
It's not fair.
All this man did was say penis.
Yeah.
What's the crime?
Show us the crime. Habeas corpus. Habeas penis. All right. So those are the four basic food groups. We're really excited to talk to Anna Soroka. She is an advisor to the head of the Lugansk People's Republic. From 1997 to 2007, she served in the Ministry of Internal Affairs of Ukraine as a serious crimes investigator. And she was also an advisor to the chairman of the Lugansk Regional Organization of the Ukrainian Red Cross Society on International Humanitarian Law until 2014. From 2018 to 2022, she was first deputy foreign minister of the Lugansk People's Republic.
So just a bit of background as to what all that means. So basically, since 2014 inside Ukraine, there's been a civil war. We've talked about it a lot on the show. There's a coup in 2014. It's backed by the U.S. In response to that coup, Ukrainians in the east of the country who feels that the new U.S.-backed coup government is cracking down on them and on their Russian culture, because many people in the east of Ukraine identify with Russia, speak Russian, are ethnic Russians. They rose up and there was a rebellion. And one of the republics that was founded was the Lugansk People's Republic. So our guest, Anna Soroka, has been very involved in that struggle. And in this interview, she's going to give a voice to her side of the conflict. And it's a side of the Ukraine conflict we don't hear often because the U.S. is on the other side, fueling this civil war that is now escalated into a full-blown proxy war with the U.S. and Russia on opposing sides. So that's the background to our interview. And let's go now to Anna Soroka.
Thank you so much for joining us. I wanted to know what's happening right now as we speak in the Luhansk region. And also, Anna, if you could talk about your role as head counselor, what that consists of, what goes into that.
Здравствуйте. Уважаемые слушатели, телезрители.
So, hello, dear listeners and maybe viewers. My name is Anna Soroka. I am the advisor of the LPR head of the Lugansk People's Republic. And mostly I'm dealing with the protection of the rights and freedoms of our people, of the Lugansk People's Republic. Currently, we are working on to find out about the what was happening to the dead servicemen, including the Ukrainian ones. We are collecting and recording the evidences of crimes of the which were done for the victims of Ukrainian aggressions. We are discovering and opening the graves in order to, in future, make some kind of reburials in a right way, including the dead servicemen of Ukrainian soldiers. We are practically doing this since 2014. And all of us were raised in Ukraine. Me also. I am personally the former officer of Ukraine, the policeman. And for me, it was always like I felt pain, I felt bad. Due to the fact that Ukraine began the aggressive military operation against us, only motivated by some political reasons. And all of that could be resolved peacefully with some kind of agreements.
What kind of agreements?
All my teams are lawyers, and we understood very well
taking into account the international law practice, that it could be some kind of federalization process or something else, maybe referendums. And we never thought to separate from Ukraine before. So then it came to our minds once that Ukraine began to do the military operations against us. For example, the 2nd of June 2014, the center of Lugansk were attacked, was attacked by the aviation. And also the 9th of May, the 2nd of May in 2014, the tragedy happened there. So that summer 2014 was a very awful one. Ukraine was deliberately trying to separate us from the rest of the country, the main part of Ukraine. It took such kind of measures as blockage, economic one and social one also. For 3 months, we had been living with no electricity and water. And then we understood that there is no way back. And also we were living in the condition of constant severe shelling from the Ukrainian side.
И несмотря на это, мы пошли на Минские соглашения.
And despite of all we've mentioned above, we, the Lugansk People's Republic, decided to have the Minsk agreements with Ukraine in 2014. And since that moment, for 8 years, yes, we had been trying to call the Ukraine to resolve the conflict in some peaceful way. It was very hard and pitiful for us to understand that they are rejecting. From the point of view of Ukraine, the people who are living there are unnecessary for Ukraine. They don't need the people, they just need territories. Because these people do not support the ideology of Ukrainian neo-Nazism, Bandera's one.
So what happened to the Minsk agreement, the Minsk Accords? Why weren't they implemented?
Ну, прежде всего, я уже сказала, конечно же, что украинская сторона...
So, as I've already said, Ukraine showed itself as an absolutely incompetent peacemaker and agree maker. Everything we were suggested to Ukraine during this Minsk talks was denied from the Ukrainian side. And as for now, when our territory is already liberated from the Ukrainian authorities, everybody can see clear that who actually was sticking to the Minsk agreement and who were not. Because there were our settlements under our authorities, the Lugansk People Republic, and they stayed intact. And those settlements which were ruled by the Ukrainian authorities, they are just wiped off the surface of the earth. They are completely destructed. We just saw that the Minsk agreements were completely unproductive. And in the shelling, in the end of last year, 2021, the shelling from Ukrainian side became more frequent and became indiscriminately. And in February 2002, the Ukrainian leaders, the politicians, they made oftenly some statement that the civilians of Lugansk People's Republic should be neutralized, the nuclear bomb should be put in the territory of Lugansk People's Republic. So all that we heard, it made us feel that we are supposed to stand up to protect our land and our homes. Because all
наша земля, наша история, почему мы должны подчиняться тому, что нам неестественно?
It's our history and our land, and why should we follow the ideology that are not natural for us.
Did Zelensky, some people have said that, Zelensky ran as a peace candidate and he ran who promised to implement the Minsk Accords. Do you think that he was lying, or some say that it was right-wing forces that scared him out of the Minsk Accords? Do you think that's true? Do you think he was scared and intimidated, or do you think he changed his mind?
Мы все наблюдали с замиранием сердца за избирательной кампанией, когда Зеленский...
Everybody here were watched with bated breath when Zelensky came into elections. And we hope that he, as a president of Ukraine, will bring peace and the conflict between Donbas and Ukraine will end. After that, when in 2020 and 2021, we witnessed a lot of trouble. And the shelling, as I've already said, become indiscriminately in Donbas territory. So our hope didn't... We understood that it was just Zelensky's words. Frankly speaking, everybody of us here understands that Ukrainian leaders, military political leadership, were prepared and were prepared by its their Western curators for many thousands of years to wage this war conflict in Donbas. As educated people, we know very well the history of own UPA, Nazi army of Ukraine. So we can see very well that the roots of this movement, the Nazi Ukrainian movement, are still visible. They were cultivated using the basis of hatred towards us, the ordinary people who just live and work on our land and are not do not support the ideology of Bandera. In 2014, we understood right away that it's this conflict is not just the civil opposition conflict. This is a policy of Russophobia, and the Western world was prepared to that conflict make Russia involved in the armed conflict on this territory. I'm perfectly sure, and I can state it, that most and all of our people who lives there, they have never thought about being separated from Ukraine to create some separate movement. The point was the state structure of Ukraine in 2014. As you remember, it was the unitary state, and it is now actually. But why we did not understood actually why the most of the Western countries are the federal countries and why we are supposed to stay the unitary state by force. As we know from the history of our world and the practice of the
решение каких-то гражданских вопросов, не состыковых, спорных вопросов.
For example, the Ireland is a part of Great Britain. Some Catalonia, Basques, Cyprus, any civil conflict can be resolved by agreements. And there were no states, no territories where the tanks were going to or aircrafts were attacking those territories. So for 8 years, we have been burying our friends and family. And it's very difficult for me to describe. There is no words to describe how hard it is. It's just one single word, pain, because the civilian population, the people just was trying to come out and get some bread, some water, and they have been killed.
Я вам покажу сейчас фотографию, если можно увидеть, будет.
I can show you the picture. These are the remains which we discovered near the settlement of Первомайск last year. These are the remains of the elderly person, the man who just came to in search for bread. He was ripped apart by Ukrainian mine, and what was left was just put into a pot. He was buried like this, and then we discovered his grave and opened, and this is what we saw.
Да, то есть как мы так его похоронили, так его мы и нашли в тазике.
This is how he was buried and how we opened the graves and what we saw.
I wanted to ask your reaction to Angela Merkel. She's the German chancellor who helped broker the Minsk Accords, which you talked about. And she recently said in an interview that basically Minsk was not intended to bring peace to Ukraine. It was intended to stall for time, to give Ukraine time to prepare for war. So this is partly what she said. She said, quote, the 2014 Minsk agreement was an attempt to give Ukraine time. And then she says, and then she says, Ukraine used this time to get stronger, as you can see today. The Ukraine of 2014-2015 is not the Ukraine of today. And I very much doubt that the NATO countries could have done as much then as they do now to help Ukraine. That's Angela Merkel speaking now. So I'm wondering your response to that, to her seeming admission that Ukraine did not, and Germany, the people who brokered Minsk, did not see the Minsk Accords actually as a peace accord, but as a stalling tactic.
Спасибо. Thank you very much for your question. Вы знаете, я благодарна.
I'm grateful to Merkel for her to being so brave to tell the truth. It's true that Ukraine used the time of Minsk agreements to become more stronger. You cannot imagine what we discover now when we move the front line away from the territory. What we see is our underground cities filled with concrete, the torture camps. Those people, Ukrainian people, were not preparing and were not ready and did not even think about fulfilling the agreements set by Minsk talks. They just were preparing to attack Donbas people. And here in Lugansk People's Republic, we did not have an army even. There were no Russian servicemen that time. They were People's Militia of Lugansk People's Republic. In accordance with the international humanitarian law, we call this category of people the People's Militia, as the civilians who took who bear the arms in their head, seeing the enemy. So actually, we agree with the assessment of such kind, and it's we are sorry that we just lost the time 8 years. It's actually a very long time, and since 2014, over 2,000 people here, the women, children, and elderly people were dead. A lot of people were forced to leave their homes. A lot of suffering were done to the elderly people for whom it's hard to move. And we saw and we understand that all the people who were suspicious, who seemed suspicious to Ukrainian authorities, they were subjected to torture, and eventually they were just missing.
The way you're described commonly in the U.S. media and by the Ukrainian government is that basically the Luhansk and Donetsk People's Republics are just Russian proxies, that you're controlled by Russia, that your rebellion was started by Russia and propped up by Russia. How do you respond to that?
Я отвечу, вы знаете как, я по-моему, начала уже.
I started my performance stating that we have never thought about separatism here. And we can even recollect the question set on the first referendum, 2014. It was the question about federalization, not about to separate from Ukraine. And in the hardest time, in 2014, in August, Russian Federation, and we feel very grateful to Russian Federation for this, they could give us some food parcels and medical care also. And without this kind of help, under the conditions of blockage from the Ukrainian side, we just would die. So it's what it is. Russia didn't insist on anything here, never. And in 2014, it was the awful tragedy for our people. Actually, nobody was forced Russian or Ukrainian tanks and Ukrainian aviation to come here and to shell and attack our territory. And we have a lot of photos and videos to prove. Everybody forgets now already the history, the roots of the conflict in Donbas, but it's very easy to remember. We remember how our elderly people just came, was coming out to the streets and was trying to talk to the Ukrainian servicemen, and they were just asked, the Ukrainian servicemen, why did you come here? We are not going to fight you. They were just trying to agree in some peaceful way. They were telling them, the Ukrainians, that we just are not supposed to worship, and we are not going to worship Bandera.
You've made reference now several times to Bandera. So that's Stepan Bandera. He's the founder of the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists. He collaborated with the Nazis during the Second World War in rounding up Jewish people and Poles for deportation and death, and later fought the Soviet Union. And his followers now today in Ukraine include groups like the Azov Battalion, the neo-Nazi group. Why do you see Bandera's followers as such a threat to your people today?
And to hear the rest of the interview, please go to usefulidiots.substack.com. That was really interesting.
Not a perspective we get to hear at all in the NATO states of the world. So very cool to hear from someone on the other side of the Ukraine war. We only hear Ukrainian voices really from one side. So very interesting to get a very different perspective.
Sometimes I think when we're having these discussions about the war, it gets a little abstract. And it's, I think, really important to hear from people who are there, remember what kind of impact it has on people's lives.
Absolutely. And to hear the full interview, go to usefulidiots.substack.com to get that and all kinds of bonus content. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Hello. Thank you so much for listening to and watching Useful Idiots. For full episodes and extended interviews, please subscribe at usefulidiots.substack.com. You can subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/usefulidiots for clips, live streams, and full episodes. Also, subscribe to us wherever you find your podcast. Follow us on Twitter at usefulidiotpod and use the hashtag usefulidiotspod. Join us Mondays at 10 a.m. for the Useful Idiots Monday morning show, where we discuss the Sunday morning news shows so you don't have to watch them.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.